People Helping People, a program bridging the community with local organizations and nonprofits making a difference in the Bay Area. If you or someone you know would like to get your messages on People Helping People, please email us at contact@poly923fm.com or desipeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com. Here are your hosts, Larry Walling and Greg Pirillo.
Hello and welcome to People Helping People on Bali 92.3 FM, the Bay Area's Bollywood station. This is the time in the week where we take a break from the music and the entertainment and we talk about issues that are affecting us on a local level, on a national level, anything that might be affecting our community. My name is Greg, and with me is my co-host, Larry. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Good morning. Doing very well, actually, after having something like the flu over the holidays.
Yeah, so you were very ill over the holidays.
I was in bed for 2 days.
Yeah, you were bedridden.
Christmas and New Year's.
I was sick over Christmas with a nasal congestion and all up in the face and the head, right?
I was going to ask you about your face.
Yeah, it's always going to look this way. And then
I couldn't refuse.
It's okay. I don't blame you, actually. That was a good one. Last week, I ended up getting a bronchial infection. It was almost
they're
like
the worst. They're the worst, man.
I covered both aspects of having a cold, the head cold and the chest cold. I prefer the head cold, if you're going to ask me. I could deal with being lightheaded.
I would too.
Because usually it's more about the problem is you get when you sleep, you get a dry mouth because you have to breathe through your mouth and constantly blow your nose and you have to constantly take, antihistamines or whatever.
So you can breathe?
To breathe, yeah. With a chest cold, it's hard because you feel like you can't breathe and your chest hurts when you cough. That pain when you cough with a chest cold is like unexplainable because it's
almost like you have pleurisy.
It's somebody sitting on your chest, yeah. And also it's difficult because every time you cough, they say a productive cough comes up with something.
Right.
But when you're sleeping and you have to constantly get up because of the mucus and the phlegm, not to sound gross, but we all know what this means.
Yeah. Thanks for being graphic. Yeah.
It stinks.
It does.
But the bigger problem we're having right now, and today's show is going to really cover like three topics.
Yeah.
The one big thing I keep hearing about is this insane flu that's happening, not just in California alone, really around the country, but in California. It's unprecedented, the amount of people who are dying under the age of 50. It's unusual to die from the flu.
You told me that, yeah.
Last check, there was over 90 people under the age of 50 that have died from this strain.
Whoa.
And the flu, what do they call it? The vaccine that they gave, the flu shot for this year, only is 35% effective against the reported cases that are happening right now, which is typical. That's what they say.
Is it because it was for last year's flu?
Yes. So when you get a flu shot, they give you a little bit of last year's flu.
Right.
And it helps build up your antibodies to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens now is some cases you might get that old flu, but in most cases it redefines itself and becomes a whole other virus.
It morphs.
So you could essentially get sick the first time you get the flu shot and then get sick with the new flu when it comes around and hits you the second time. But what's happening is that the emergency rooms all over this state are overcrowded. And in some cases, they've had to turn people away because people are so nervous about this. When they get this flu bug, they find themselves almost immediately bedridden. And they see how quickly they're going south. And everybody's nervous hearing about all these other reported deaths. So they're automatically going to the hospital and they can't accommodate the amount of people that are going to the emergency rooms.
They're trying to be preemptive, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess based on age.
But they don't have the room.
In some cases, if you're 21 years old and they say, we probably don't need to admit you to the hospital. But then, I just read an article the other day about a 21-year-old personal trainer bodybuilder who died after 2 days after he first got chest pains and a cough. He quickly devolved. And at 21 years old, he died. His parents said they took him to the emergency room, and then he ended up dying from organ failure due to septic from the flu virus. And you don't think 21-year-olds are going to have a hard time surviving a flu bug.
That's hard to believe.
It really, really is. But it's also, they say the key here is wash your hands constantly. When you come into contact with anybody, you should immediately wash your hands and also avoid touching your nose and mouth. We all do this, right?
That's true.
How many times when you're sitting there, you'll find yourself scratching your nose, just kind of like rubbing your nose because it itches. All the germs that are on your hands, when I shake your hands, are going to be transferred, and it's easiest to go through your mucous membranes in your nose.
That's true. And your eyes, by the way, through your tear ducts.
Your eyes, too. That's right.
Yeah, it's true. Through your eyes.
So what you should do is walk around. I know they say you shouldn't always sanitize because eventually you become
immune to it, desensitized.
Yeah. So they say you shouldn't, but during flu season, you should take extra care. I say just wash your hands every hour or two.
I'm pretty good about that. Like, for instance, if I go shopping, mm-hmm. I'll say always, because as soon as I get home, I wash my hands. Before I unload the groceries or anything, I wash my hands.
You think about how many times you go out in public and you're pushing the wagon at the supermarket. How many hands have been on that, right?
Absolutely.
And they give you the wipes. When you walk in the store, mm-hmm. a lot of times it's Safeway. You could just grab those wet wipes and wipe down your cart, but I very rarely do that, truthfully speaking.
Wipe your hands when you walk out the door is what you ought to do.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
But also you go to Starbucks and you're standing there, you lean on the counter. You go anywhere. I mean, you could be in your office mm-hmm. and you turn a door handle that 30 or 40 people just turned before you. One of those people have a flu bug or bronchitis or whatever, chances are your body, especially in a moment of weakness, if your body is prone to it at that time, you'll get it immediately. Some people have a stronger immune system mm-hmm. and they're able to fight these things, but it depends on...
Take vitamins.
Yeah.
Take
it's unbelievable.
A good vitamin.
Are you feeling better?
Why do I
100%? No, I'm just curious. Well, I know you always look that way.
Is that an insinuation?
Just ask him. Making sure you're okay.
Yeah.
You were very ill.
It went really fast. I mean, almost like within 24 hours, I was amazed. So I won't be graphic, but it was intestinal. And
that was a dig, ladies and gentlemen, right there. When he said, I won't be graphic, because he's suggesting I was.
Was I alluding to somebody?
I think you were.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But true. I should have held
but
back.
But I was. I was so sick, I couldn't, I had to stay in bed. And I never, even with the flu, for instance.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to put me down. But this did. But yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Much better, yeah.
Well, that was one of the things, and I highly recommend for those of you who need some information about this flu virus, Google what to do on a local level. I think what the key is the minute you get any symptom of the flu bug, you should shut it down and see a doctor. See your general care physician.
Right, or you could go to urgent care. I mean, I've urgent care. Yeah, because a lot of times with your own MD, they can't take you right away. Mm-hmm. But urgent care almost always does.
And in some cases, I know some people have issues with their insurance. When it goes to a urgent care facility, usually it's about $99 for a checkup.
Really?
Yes, that's what I paid last year.
I never got.
Well, if you don't have, for example, some people might not have health insurance. I'm talking about if you don't have any insurance, or if you do and it's not in network, you still can go there for relatively cheap if it's an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, in case of some people might not do it to save some money, is it really worth it to get that ill and risk
it? I mean, it's essentially taking the place of the emergency room.
Yeah,
in a lot of cases.
Exactly, which are always crazy.
Yeah,
busy.
It is. It's helped a lot.
So that's one thing. And then, a couple weeks back, I would say it was probably 2 weeks, 3 weeks prior to Christmas.
Or four or five.
Before Christmas, I thought it was mid-December, we had a show.
I have to go look. It's been at least 3 weeks.
About the opioid?
Yeah, at least.
No, I think that was, I said 3 weeks before Christmas. So I think it was the weekend of December 10th or something in that range.
I see.
We talked about opioid addiction and the severity mm-hmm. of the problem in this country, whether it's dependency, whether it's detoxing from this, whether it's children and teenage use of the drugs. Most of these started with prescriptions.
Yes.
In some cases, it was street level. And then what happens is when you can't get your hands on these prescription drugs, you go to the cheapest and next best available drug, which is unfortunately heroin for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a widespread issue with opioids.
It's epidemic.
We discussed a friend of yours who passed along some information about a woman who had chronic pain mm-hmm. due to opioid addiction because of what I think it was a back issue she had originally. Was that right?
Back or stomach.
There was some sort of issue she had. She was prescribed.
Exactly. She was prescribed this medication.
Medication to help with her chronic pain.
Yes.
What happened was with the abuse of opioids in this country, her addiction became so severe, they eventually weaned her off and took her off of these drugs, which no longer were available.
Right, they weren't available.
Yeah. And from that point forward, she was suffering from chronic pain.
Yeah.
Not just from the withdrawals from the drug, but also because of her ailments.
Yeah.
And then this past week, you brought some very sad news about that.
Yeah, she actually took her life.
So due to the severity of her issues.
Right. And she felt she was also becoming somewhat of a, I talked to my friend the other day, maybe not a burden, but she didn't feel like she was needed. And also, I think when you have something like that going on for a period of time, people get desensitized to it.
Of course.
And they almost like say, oh God, this again, you know, we got to hear this again.
Yeah.
It had gotten to that point. So that really affected her as well, as you can imagine. But more than anything, I think it was the pain, the severity of the pain. And she knew, and she went to the doctors continually. They said there was nothing that they could do for her anymore.
52 years old, by the way.
52 years old.
There's more to this story, though, because it's actually a national news story. And if you go online, you could find articles. It was in Petaluma, which is down in Southern California.
I think that's where she lived.
Petaluma, right?
That's not where she took her life.
Right, but I think that was where, because it said, the reason I bring this up is her husband or boyfriend?
Husband.
Who is in custody right now and is actually in prison awaiting trial.
Something.
Because he assisted in the suicide. It was supposed to be a joint suicide. It was supposed to be the both of them were renting a hotel.
Yeah, I mean the articles that it's out there. It's on the internet, of course.
Yeah. So now this gentleman,
in the newspaper.
I say gentleman, who had his own addiction issues, ended up assisting in the suicide. So you could find all the information.
Yeah, it's
what's
there.
Important about this is that we recognize that not only is there a physical addiction involved with the opioids, there's also a mental aspect to it. Because you said, her condition was that she felt like she was a burden, or she felt that she creating issues for other people, or feeling like she was a burden to others.
Yeah, of course.
The mental aspect of it is it creates very thick fog of depression.
Yeah.
And
you
could really warp your sense of reality. Mm-hmm. And it almost like anything else becomes insignificant to
you. So you and I were talking earlier before the show that, I mean, neither one of us, Greg or I, can understand, of course, because our heads have never been there. Just think about it for a moment. You know, when a person starts to think about suicide and they even delve into different ways to go about it, they do research on it. I mean, we being, I guess if you want to call this normal, can't understand the mindset because we're not there.
Yes.
Mentally, physically, anything. So, of course, if you were in their place, it would be different. I mean, because you're not thinking the same way we think. I guess you could say not thinking rationally.
Clearly rationally.
Yeah,
right.
Any of those things. So, you know, we cannot, we can't condemn, we can't judge, we can't do any of those things because we've never been there, obviously. So the last time we did this, we talked about this on our show several weeks ago, we were kind of like, talking to you guys, if there is anybody out there that could offer us some helpful information, it really helps a lot. So even more so now, I mean, for me, it's very personal, even though it didn't happen to me, you know, my family, it's personal. So it's let's just look at it like this. It's going to happen to you too. Something like this will happen to you as well. So it might not be this same exact kind of thing, but when we think about that, it's you know, that's really, really sad, but it's not happening to me. Don't think that way.
Well, let's face it. The issue that's going on with opioids in this country is starting to really affect the younger generations. It's now, being realistic or being real about this, as an adult male, I don't recall in my high school and my teenage years even having any access to any opiates. I can honestly tell you, I've never been in the presence of anything like heroin or anything like it. Now, when it comes to prescription medicines as we get older, yes. But as a teenager, I had no access. Those weren't the things that we had. We had alcohol to worry about, maybe marijuana and things like that. Yeah. Every generation has its own thing. But now, any of us that have kids, especially if they're at a very young age, now's the time to teach them as to what they're getting into. So that way, when they do come across, it's like 10 or 12 years old, you'd say, oh, that's too young to talk to them. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Because they're learning not about these drugs before they even get to high school. There's going to be one or two friends that are way more advanced than the other kids that are going to find out things from their older brothers, older siblings, or their parents. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to get that information, and our kids need to be educated. That's why I agree with your point. If there's somebody listening who might be able to educate us, our families, our parents, that we could talk about on this show so we can help protect our children and be able to inform them enough to make the right decisions later in their years when they're able, when they are confronted with these drugs.
Yeah, and I would think it's just like, I mean, this kind of thing, we talk about it, we've talked about it, issues with our kids in school and sex education. When do you talk to them about sex? When are they too young? So when do you bring it up? But it starts at home.
We had that last year. We had a couple of guests in here who were involved on school.
You see,
boards.
Last year I always think like 365 days.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It was probably around the beginning of the school year, talking to parents, talking about how they can address what's being taught to their children through sex education. There were conservative parents who felt they didn't think their children at the age of 10 should be learning about these things. And there were others who were saying we need them to learn now because they learn younger than ever before.
They do. So when you think about these types of things and just us, let's just think about our families for a minute, or friends, close friends, because we're intimate with those people. So if you see anything that's abnormal, any kind of abnormality, don't just, slough it off. Pay attention to that and see if there's any kind of a pattern, and then do a little bit of research and then start, looking into ways to help. Because it can lead into these kinds of things, which is really tragic. And when you think about this too, that person didn't just affect their lives, they affected everybody around them.
It's a chain.
So everybody's affected by it.
Chain
so you're not
effects,
immune
yeah.
to that.
Think of how it trickles down.
You're
not just harming yourself in these cases, right?
It's a trickle-down effect, and it's exponential. It just grows and grows and grows.
Yeah. So
like a cancer.
If you know somebody who might be able to talk with us about this, or if you yourself is somebody who might be able to add some insight to this conversation, you can email Larry and I at theyseepeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com.
Hmm.
You could also go directly through bali923fm.com. Just send an email to contact through the contact on the website and just put people helping people in the subject, or just put our names in there and it'll get to me.
Yeah.
Because we do want to explore this topic more. This is one that I don't think is going away anytime soon. It's one of the biggest epidemics in this country
right now.
It's
a heavy duty thing because you've got thousands, if not millions of people that are struggling out there right now. So it's kind of like something that a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah.
It's the unmentionable.
I heard a number the other day that really blew my mind. Something like 1 in 5 right now, 1 in 5 people have some sort of an opioid addiction, whether it's simply from prescription medications or whether it's from street drugs or whatever. It's a scary thing to think about, but it's also the reality and the world we live in right now. It's changed. In the 40s and 50s, you worried about polio. You worried about these other illnesses, but nowadays we have a whole other set of fish to fry.
Yeah.
And, we just have to adapt as parents, as adults, as humans. We need to adapt and we need to help our kids get through these major issues.
Yeah, we have to find new and different ways to cope with these things.
So that is two parts. Now, the other sad state of affairs that we could talk about probably for hours, and we'll spend the next 10 minutes of show about these mudslides happening down, specifically, and I think it was Montecito,
right? It's just right there next to Santa Barbara. It's Santa Barbara, but it's just like it's a very affluent section of Santa Barbara.
You told me Ellen DeGeneres, Oprah Winfrey all have homes in that
area. Yeah.
I just saw somebody very famous, I can't remember who it was, lost his home in the mudslide. A very famous actor. For some reason, the name is escaping me. I'll remember. but he lost his home in this mudslide. But you are that you have family down there.
You work down there. I do. I mean, I have two businesses, one up here in the Bay and one in Santa Barbara, and I would have to say that 98% of my work is in Montecito.
Is that right, that much?
Yes, all of it. All of it is in Montecito, except for a lousy 2%. Yes, because that's where the money is, where they can afford to have these things done that I do. But anyway, Greg and I looked at a list of the people that had been killed, and it was 17 now. Is it 17?
17.
17. I didn't know any of them.
There's a lot of children involved in this, by the way, which is really sad. We saw there were four children that died under the age of 12. I know there was a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old. 17 dead, as what we know right now. There's 1,250 people that are still searching, hoping for a miracle. I think they're saying that the number of people that are still missing that they can count is 5. And right
that's
now,
that's a lot less than it was the other day.
Yeah, because there are people that are calling in now saying, "If you're looking for me, I'm okay."
Okay. Yeah.
So they've actually updated these numbers hourly. So if you go online, you'll actually see there. This is changing day to day. So what we have here is authorities say 17 people confirmed dead. More than 40 are still missing after the mudslide early Tuesday. The hillside's bereft of trees and vegetation could not contain the mud that formed after 8 days of heavy rain. They're really trying their best right now because they realize that anybody who's missing that might be buried. How many days
what? Did you say how many days of rain?
After days of heavy rain. I didn't say specific.
I only thought it was one.
When they put the list up of people who passed away, it really is scary. The youngest one was 3 years old. And when you see the names, it puts reality to it. Mm-hmm. And it's a really scary thing. And they're saying right now, if any hope for those that might still be buried, they'd have to get to them now. Because after 2-3 days, there's no way they'll have been able to survive for much longer. So this is a desperate time for them. It's a scary time. It's really, we talked about it earlier, why anybody would want to build their home into a mountain is beyond me. But in some cases, these homes weren't necessarily built into mountains, where what we're talking about.
No, they weren't. I've done a lot of work on homes up there, and none of them were that I'd worked on, really. I mean, they're in leveled out areas, and they're just like any foothill community.
Yeah.
And you don't get the sense that they're in any kind of imminent danger from anything, really, even fire.
So would you say that this area is comparable to, say, like a Beverly Hills or...
Oh, very much so.
Because you really don't have that many people like you and I living there, essentially.
I actually did live there.
You did?
I did.
So you're rich.
Yeah. When I first moved there, my family from a ski resort town in Southern California, we moved there, I think, in 1989.
Oh.
And our kids were basically raised in Santa Barbara. But we moved to Montecito. And we lived there for a year and a half, 2 years. But it wasn't a big house. It was just a little dinky house, but it was perfect for our family.
Right.
And at that time, they weren't, you know, the prices weren't nearly as bad as they are now. But yeah, we're surrounded by wealthy people, but we just lived in a little track house.
Well, if Oprah Winfrey lives in that town, chances are it's a very rich town.
That's what I wanted to tell you. So somebody, I can't remember who it was, told me the other day that her property was actually... did get a lot of mud on her property.
Okay.
And the house next door to her, don't quote me, but I think was either damaged or washed away.
Yeah, as she spoke out today, she actually came out. Her and Ellen both talked about, because they're trying to do fundraising for the town.
Okay.
But she did speak that she was affected. It didn't say to what level.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yes.
But I did. She did say that it affected her, and it actually, I guess it did reach her in some
way. Yeah, it did. Well, if you know where she lives, she was right. I mean, in Santa Barbara, you're close to everything
right
that happened. So she wasn't that close. I mean, she wasn't that far away from the fire.
So here's the celebrities who were affected by this. Oprah Winfrey, Rob Lowe, had his house was damaged. Jeff Bridges' house was almost destroyed, severely damaged in the actor Jeff Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
There's others too, but these are the ones that have actually come out. So that gives you an idea. Rob Lowe lived there as well. These are very, very wealthy people. But listen, I don't care how wealthy you are. I think we all agree. When it comes to losing belongings, there's nothing worse because you can't get those things back. You can't get back pictures.
So you were talking, and I didn't, let's see. I was told again, I can't remember who the source was, but it was reliable, that the evacuations started, or the orders started Sunday night, or Sunday sometime.
Yeah, you were telling me that, correct.
And I believe that the MUDS situation started happening around 2 a.m. on Tuesday morning.
Right, that is right.
Yeah, so I don't know, you know.
Now, is that enough time to get a day and a half to get people out of their homes?
Well, yeah, when you think about fires, I mean, how much time do they have? Because
True.
You know how fast fires travel.
Right.
But they knew that it was imminent because of the rain. So they knew it was going to happen. It was just when.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, and I know personally people that chose not to leave their homes when they were told to during the fires.
Right.
One was my brother. So people do that.
Okay.
They don't heed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it was a significant number of people that had to evacuate. And I know, considerably speaking, it was considerably less damage than probably could have been. There's always going to be people who think they're going to brave it, right? I was just watching something about the hurricanes in Florida and these families who decided to stay with it. And then they were showing all the people in the community helping them with damage control and recover anything they can from their mess. And in some cases, these people didn't leave simply because they didn't want to leave their belongings behind. They were lucky to survive.
Yep.
But you're always going to have those people who feel they have more to lose by leaving than staying. It's always sad to see that. But those are the people who end up putting themselves in harm's way. And you don't want to say, well, you knew about it and you should have gotten out of there.
No,
but you
of
also
course
should,
not.
You have to think your life is more important than any material thing you own.
I just think it's the mindset, because I said it before. It's just that you never think it's going to happen to you.
Yeah, of course.
You just don't think it's going to happen to you. I mean, I've been affected by fires several times in my life and evacuated several times in my life. But there was one time I did not leave. Everybody else did, and this is when I lived in Santa Barbara, right on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And the firemen came through, and it was imminent. You know, they said it was going to come down our lane. So there was only one other family, and we didn't leave. But here's the thing. We had the ocean just steps away.
Yeah.
We could jump right in the water.
Yeah.
And it would never have affected us that way. So, and we knew that. But that was the only reason we stayed. And we used the seawater to douse the houses with.
Really?
Hmm?
That's interesting.
We did.
You felt comforted by the ocean. To me, that's the most scary thing in the world, having
that. I body surfed all my life.
Yeah, but you can't. There's no way that you can control what happens to you when you're in a body of water that big.
I don't care about the water. I mean, because I've been born in it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much you're born in. You're telling me the ocean is the most powerful thing on the earth.
Yeah, but I mean, look at surfers. So I was a body surfer.
Yeah, but if you do surfing in a regular day, it's fine. But when there's something massive like a
fire doesn't control the surf.
Yeah, but where are you going to go? You're going
to the water.
What about?
Well, here's something else. We also had boats, you know, because we lived there.
Right. Okay.
So we had boats. We could little fishing boats. We could take on.
Jump in. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I'm saying with riptides and currents, it can be dangerous.
Well, where I lived, that was almost non-existent.
Really?
As far as riptide, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it, Larry.
I mean, and the family was surfers. You know, they had three sons that were surfers, and we're really close. So, yeah, but that was the only time.
Right.
I didn't leave.
Well, yeah,
heck with
you know, everybody has their reasoning. I never really doubt that, because it's easy to sit here and point fingers and say somebody's wrong for what they decide to do. But it's your life and your decisions. Unfortunately, though, sometimes deciding to ride through a storm or an event like that can be very dangerous, especially if you have children. Get your children out of harm's way, because they can't fend for themselves.
Well, here's the other thing. We had something happen just south of Santa Barbara in a community called La Conchita. That's a bedroom community of Santa Barbara. We lost over 13 people with that one. And the same thing happened. Of course, no fires, but this mountain is moving. So we had so much torrential rain, I think it was in El Nino, that it just made the mountain unstable and just buried people alive.
Crazy.
One family lost seven members.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was bad.
Anyway, a lot of things to talk about, and obviously today we just kind of broad strokes through some of these issues, but these are all things you'll be hearing about more from us in the next couple of weeks. We're pretty excited because we finally have a good contact directly about possibly having Veterans Association on the air with us to talk about helping veterans on a local level, which is very important to us.
Yeah.
So we'll get back to you hopefully next week or the following week. We'll have somebody in the studio for that. I'll be out next week.
Yeah,
but we'll be running the show.
Where are you going, by the way?
I will be working on the East Coast in our New York operation for a week. So.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so we're running low on time. Anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Pay attention to your family and your friends, people around you that you're close to, especially. And this is concerning the opiate thing. That's really devastated me right now. So it can affect you too, and eventually it probably will.
And also, I always say this as well when it comes to the lady committing suicide. Watch for unusual habits and characteristics from people you love, because a lot of times we don't pay close attention to them, and when they need help and they aren't willing to ask for it, sometimes we have to intervene at those times and get involved, even when you might not think you have the time.
The sad thing, sorry to interrupt you, is this person did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
She asked for help.
So pay close attention to your loved ones, because they might need you and you might be the reason they're able to get help and live, as opposed to being sorry that you never stepped in and got involved. Unfortunately, mental illness and depression are very, very prominent right now, and a lot of times it stems from drug use and you know, the
very
after effects.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thanks so much for listening to People Helping People. Next week, we'll hear us again right here, 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. We thank you for being here with us, and Larry and I will speak to you very soon on Bali 92.3 FM.